not good. Oh, that's good. And even if I'm a little bummed, which I'm not, but even if something takes me by surprise or maybe I'm in a different mood, like that always gets me dialed in.
Every time, man. I think our listeners have the same thing.
It's Long Cut. Those guys are on tour right now, man. Yeah, they're on the East Coast. If you guys don't know Long Cut, the music we play, JT, good buddy of ours, he was a Marine that served with me at a division of schools, and he is a country rapper now. Yep. Hip hop. That's a thing. That's like one of the fastest growing genres there is, which goes to show you how little we fucking know about music because it's growing fast, but he's good at it, man. It's super cool. We've got some other stories today from division schools and some things that were unexpected that we're going to get into. But today, man, we've got a super, super well-respected, interesting, intriguing person to me. This is a guy that I follow on Instagram that's done a lot of cool stuff in the Marine Corps. And, man, I super respect just his just the way that he writes and how he expresses himself on camera and some of his thought process. And it's a little different than mine. I'm kind of like a go, 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 slash sprinkle of idiot, slash sprinkle of something else in there. And the way that he talks, it slows me down and it forces me to look at things from a different perspective, which I really like, man, because I think if there is a quality you can have, it's that it's just slowing down and having some self-awareness of I'm a this. Where can I just maybe pull some tools from some other, you know, from some other place and just give it food for thought? And it's helped a ton in my own life. And, I've followed him for a long time and finally just decided to reach out to him and ask him if, you know, hey, is there anything that I can do? And he's got a nonprofit he's going to talk about as well. But I think he's one of the most interesting guys because in addition to still, you know, still serving in the Marine Corps, he's also got a nonprofit that I think is extraordinary for guys. And I want to get involved however I can. But the first thing was, hey, let's throw a podcast together and talk about it. But without further ado, man, we'll kind of get into it. His name's Tom Schumann. Normally known as Sir, and I got to tell this story, man, we were telling it, but just for all of our viewers, they can have some context on the Marine Corps, and so I was telling Eli about Tom coming on, and hey, man, I've got this guy, Marine Corps officer, you know, and done some cool stuff, he's got a nonprofit, man, it's just, he's super creative, and a lot of guys that are still on active duty don't really get that creative with some things. I'm intrigued by it. And hey, he's down to the podcast. I'm excited. And I'm telling Eli everything he needs to know, but what he actually needs to know. And he's like, cool. Well, what's the dude's name? And I go, Sir. He's like, no, man. I was like, well, hey man, here's kind of how it works in the Marine Corps. Like this is, yeah, that's what I call him. I was being funny, but it also gave purposefully gave Eli an opportunity.
That's
to
right. That's right.
Reach out on Instagram. And
did get his
himself.
Email address.
I did.
I was impressed with that.
I did get his email address. He actually sent that to me before I asked him, so I'll give him credit for that. but no, man, it was cool, and it gave you an opportunity to say hi to him. But yeah. Tom Schumann's on today, Marine Corps officer. You're at the Naval Academy currently, correct? As a professor?
Yep.
So for those of you that typically listen to this when you drive or you work out, sit down, grab a notebook and a dictionary, because he's gonna spin some cool stuff on you, and should be a good one. But Tom, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome,
man.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Still an infantry Marine, so I would say, you know, grab those weights. Don't need to necessarily sit down just yet. So if you're about to get after it, proceed, continue. When you asked, you know, I'm a big believer in kind of starting with yes and trying to find value where I can. And you bring up your background and your experience, and I just know that I'll benefit and I'll be better by the end of this conversation, just getting to learn from you. And you've walked down paths that I'm not familiar with. And so anytime someone with those types of experiences says, hey, and not just like business experiences, just life experiences, you know, someone says, hey, would you like to talk? And someone has some wisdom, you know, it only makes sense. Only a fool would say, you know, I'm not interested. Right. And so if time is our most precious asset, right, I'm going to invest it in places where it's going to yield. So here we're talking business already, right? So I'm going to want this to yield. And so this is going to be good for me. And so appreciate the opportunity.
100%. Well, and here's the deal. You've already been an extraordinary value to me through your social media. So my job today is to like not devalue the trust that you put in by coming on the podcast with us. But giving listeners a little bit of context before we get to your nonprofit, PB Abate, correct?
Correct.
Just a little context on, yeah, man, just who you are and what your career kind of looked like as far as like the path you chose to take within the Marine Corps.
Sure. I am an infantry Marine. I did ROTC, commissioned, went to college in Chicago. Why did I serve? By the way, if for those of you who've heard me do some, I've done some podcasts within the last year, I will always make it a point to say that I find my own story very boring. I know many interesting individuals. I like to tell their stories. There's one, you know, that we have a mutual friend that we'll get to talking about that. You know, those are the kind of stories that I think are personally interesting. So I like to, if, you know, if you want to hit 2x speed right now or hit the 15 seconds jump, you know, this is where you do it. You know, I never feel comfortable, telling this background information. I think boring. I think, you know, to
infantry
me,
Marines are like, never boring, man. Infantry Marines are, I won't allow you to say that they're now, did you start off enlisted?
Negative.
Okay, so you came through the commission side, went to school, became an officer, and then now, and you served with 3-5?
Yep.
Very cool. And now you are at the Naval Academy teaching a ton of cool shit.
Sure am.
How about that? And where can people find you on Instagram if they want to get a little bit more of you?
Sure. So I'm at killzone.kill.z0n3. As soon as you type the word kill, Instagram's going to put up a prompt that says, are you okay? This is true story. Type in I'm just a believer in what's in it for me, right? There's this, I was a director of combat instructor school at the School of Infantry, and we teach BIC, our basic instructor course. And part of it is knowing your audience, what's in it for me. And so as a person who has had to listen to officers talk at length about their bios, I'm kind of always of the mindset, like, cool story, bro. You were great 10 years ago. Why do you rate my time today?
Yeah.
And, you know, I could say, oh, look at these fancy things on my chest. This must mean I'm somebody or did something. And I say, like, actually, I don't care what you did before you came in this room. Like, what value are you adding right now that you deserve my time and attention? And without fail, most officers are going to come in before they do the talk and say, like, in 1997 and then in 2003. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't care.
How many right? other officers like you? Are you a little against the grain? I mean, besides like your professor status, like some of your ideology there, I bet you've got a great relationship with enlisted Marines.
So those are my people. No doubt. I'm going to school another. So the Marine Corps sent me to get two different master's degrees and then over three different universities over 4 years. So one of my, you know, when you want to talk about dumb grunt stereotype, don't like it. The Marine Corps has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars in for me to think with my brain, right, as a grunt. So but it's kind of this idea that next year I'm going to be hanging out with a bunch of 04s for a year. At least at the Naval Academy, I get to go hang out with the mids who they're like dorkier, nerdier visions of like, I mean, cause they're still 18. So they still kind of think and act like 18-year-olds, but then they're also like, a lot of them are pretty dorky. So, I mean, they're not an enlisted, but they at least get they help, you know, get me through the day. A couple of weeks ago, a buddy of mine that I worked with at SOI actually reached out and said, hey, can you come talk to my troops down at 8th and I, Silent Joel team? So I went down there, I talked to Bravo Company, and it's the first time I've been around a large room of enlisted Marines in a long time, and I just filled my cup. You know, I just said, yes, these are my people. This is what so I'll be a mover in summer 2022. I'll head back to the fleet finally, and I'll head back to an infantry battalion. And I can't wait to be with the troops again because, yeah, I think my very blue collar background. I grew up on the south side of Chicago, you know, single mom. She's a cop. She's a Chicago cop. And so, wow. You know, I just my background is probably more aligned with your average enlisted than officer. And I think I'm not, you know, I've never been the smartest guy in any room. I never been accused of that. I don't have to worry about that problem. But I think there's a tipping point between like intellectual and academic IQ and social and emotional IQ. And so I'm very safely skewed towards social emotional IQ, whereas as you kind of go up that ladder, the intellectual academic IQ, you can start to get to a tipping point where you lose the ability to interact with people. And so I'm not in peril of that anytime soon. So I'm fortunate that, I'm the troops. There's a new term I learned. So one of my students wrote this in their reflection paper. I have my students write a reflection paper at the end of every semester. And they said, Major Schumann is FERDA.
FERDA.
FERDA. And fortunately they also explained what the acronym meant. It's like for the boys and for the girls, FERDA. So there's still many slangs that I don't understand these days, like F, like why I don't know what when people put like F in the chat, I don't know what that means, or based, I don't know what based, you know, there's still a lot of like terms that I really couldn't tell you what the hell people are talking about, but and I had seen this FERDA thing and I heard it, and now fortunately for the boys.
That sounds pretty cool. We don't know. Eli's going to look up F and Bayes. And man, when you talk about like just being socially intelligent and things like that, like I think it's super important because, you know, especially if someone's intelligent and has a lot to give, if it's unrelatable or if the message cannot be translated, especially emotionally, like someone doesn't think you're for the boys, you know, that can be a big miss, you know. But moving forward, man, before we move forward, single mom, cop, Chicago, what was life for you growing up, and has any of that translated into kind of how you get after it nowadays?
Yeah. It was chaotic. I grew up in a home with all women, and things were always high emotional. And I had to learn at a kind of young age, to be able to compartmentalize all the crazy shit happening in my home at any given time, and to kind of, which I think is probably the chief characteristic of any leader, is this self-composure, this equanimity, which is this idea that in the storm, you can be that source of calm. And so when we're in a firefight, my troops need to be able to look to me as a source of stability. And so I deployed with Kilo 3-5 as a platoon commander at Sangin. Then I deployed again with 1st Reconnaissance as a JTAC and then as advisor. And both of those deployments were, you know, extremely kinetic. And when I got outside the wire and found myself in crazy situations, I just said, oh, like this, everything's all fucked up and everything is, I said, I know exactly, I've been training for this my whole life. I said, oh, I just gotta, you know, I gotta put order. Oh, this is all case. So I say it's like entropy and homeostasis, entropy being all the chaos. It's like, oh, this chaos needs someone to order it. I've been ordering chaos from a young age. And so, this situation needs some mortars. This situation needs a little bit of a machine gun. Some rockets and guns would be good right here. And so now, support by fire position here. And so like, it's just like, here's how I just, oh, this thing just, it's just big, chaotic, messy situation, which I'm very familiar with. And now it just needs someone to apply order to it. And, I know how to do that. And so, I felt like a lot of things were validated under fire for me in that this is probably the right profession. I think it's difficult to know that until you actually are in the fire. But I just like Michael Jordan probably needs to have had a basketball in his hands at some point. I probably needed to be in a firefight at some point. And where he performs his best is the fourth quarter, you know, championship games. Where I found that I'm at my best is under fire and more chaos the better.
Right. Two things that stick out to me when you're talking about that, especially as we segue kind of into business and we talk about PB Abate and what you're doing with that. Was there something that stood out to you? Because you're still in the Marine Corps, you know, and a lot of guys come out and a lot of people try to put together nonprofits, or a lot of times that can be very not superficial in a bad way, but a very immediate reaction, especially nowadays with social media and the internet. A lot of guys want to, you know, do nonprofits because, you know, at first, especially when you're getting out, you want to give back or you want to stay close to your comrades and things like that. You're still doing it while you're in, but you're also pulling it off, and there's business that comes to that. So I've got two questions for you with that. Is the decision to create the nonprofit, was there anything similar to combat as far as like something being a mess and things that you had to organize there? Was there something that the veteran community was lacking? So you felt like, man, there's some disarray, there's disorganization, there's malicious people trying to take something from it. And then these other organizations aren't doing enough that are for it. And I feel like I need to come in and create some order there. So that's my first question for you. Second question that we can answer as we move forward is, being under fire, you know, when you go on deployment, was introduced to you. They placed you into that environment. How are you able to, you know, not only create this idea for your nonprofit, but is there a way where you correlate placing yourself under fire in business in order to create success and create answers for yourself as far as moving forward and what the right decisions are, what aren't the right decisions? Because I talk a lot about business being a battlefield for me and how I choose to see some things. And we've got to create circumstances in business because we're not getting thrown to the wolves. We're not getting thrown under pressure. We kind of have to initiate and create that opportunity there. And I use the word opportunity on purpose, but twofold question back to that first one is, was there a lot of, you know, just disarray? Was it chaotic within the veteran community and you over a certain relationship with the Marine or circumstance or some things that you saw as far as not being right within that community created that initiation to step up and take chance there?
Sure. So April of 2020, one of my Lance Corporal team leaders called me. It was almost midnight on a Friday night. You know, when my commitment to my troops is once we fight together and I consider, like you're saying, everything's a battlefield, right? So if we served together, we fought together. And so once I serve with you, you know, it's a lifelong commitment. There's no expiration date. It's not at the end. It's like, whether it's 1 year, 10 years or 20 years, I'll be there. Right. And so anybody can talk. I put those into action probably weekly with a letter of recommendation, a reference for a police department. So I am, you know, don't hear for somebody for 5 years. Hey, I'm applying 10 years. And it's like, Roger that, no problem. So it was April of last year, and I got a text that one of my team leaders, Corporal Justin McLeod, had passed away. And McLeod, he was not my first Marine who had committed suicide, but it was probably, that one was particularly tough in that right before we were set to deploy, he was going to EAS. He had just had a kid. McLeod had had college baseball scholarships, but he decided to enlist in 06, 07 timeframe, because he wanted to go to the war. And so he passes up this opportunity to go play baseball in college. He goes to Iraq 3-5, does a MEW at 3-5, and then he's going to get out. And I just say, hey, he goes, you know, sir, I just had my son. I talked to my wife. I think I was thinking about extending. I think I'm going to EAS. And I said, man, you got to do what's best for your family. But just know that you are designated marksman. You are top land naver in the platoon, and you're one of my best team leaders. And so I know you have a family. This is also a family. We could really use you. Do what you need to do. Talk to your wife again and just let me know. And he comes back and says, you know, yeah, you're right. I'm going to extend. And so 2 months later, we're on a patrol. This is my third squad, and I'm about six or seven guys back in the formation. ID goes off up front, and I run up there and I see my engineer, Spivey, and then I see McLeod, and Spivey is going into shock, and McLeod is missing two legs, part of his arm, and one of my Marines, Teague, walks up to me and hands me McLeod's fingers, and I just, it's like, well, things I had not planned for, or somebody handing me somebody else's body parts. And so I just said, thanks, Teague. And I said, go hold security. And I put these fingers in my cargo pocket, and I got the medevac inbound, got the LZ swept. And once I kind of get all that, and Sergeant Decker, my squad leader, kind of course helped me there. And then once all that was in motion, I would always go to the casualty, because anytime you have an amputee, it takes a whole bunch of people to kind of work on that guy. And so I would always pull one of the junior Marines off, and so you would go hold security, let me put my hand in their guts, right? And McLeod is expiring, you know, is just flatlining, just and so now I was faced with one of the hardest conversations I've ever had, and I'm trying to tell this Marine, I said, hey, you've got to stay with us. You're going to teach your son how to play baseball. You got to stay with us. You're going to coach his little league team. And those were all his goals, right? He's going to get out and coach his sons, and he's going to teach them how. And now I'm trying to tell this guy who's a triple amputee. And that was tough. But I will tell you that the will to live is powerful. And when I'm talking to him about his son, and I obviously feel all this responsibility and all this, and while I'm having this conversation, but I also, we talked about that source of stability, that source of self-composure, that the people are looking, how are you going to react to this? And so while everything inside me is screaming and tearing apart, I have to maintain that composure. But once that seed got planted, that you're going to stay here, you're going to make it for Desmond. The will to live is a powerful thing, man. He stayed with us. And the issue with McLeod is he ended up getting, you know, hundreds of surgeries, and he was always in and out of the hospital on meds and everything. And I think finally just all that took its toll. And so, you know, I had the platoon of 35, I had 19 casualties, three killed in action, one being the guy, right? Well, two of the guys right behind me, one Benagua, one Pedo. And so I know what it's like to write those letters and to make those phone calls. And when I am in combat, I'm prepared that is part of my, and what's hard is on a Friday night and you just put your daughter to bed and you're laying next to your wife and you got to start to make those calls. That's, and start to call the boys. That is tough, man. And so, that was kind of the first step. And then two more of my Marines from when I was a company commander killed themselves within the next 30 days. And one of them was a non-combat Marine. And so I spent my time at graduate school at Georgetown before the Marine Corps sent me to teach at the Naval Academy, studying trauma narratives, moral injury, homecoming type stuff, and mostly in the Vietnam space. And there's a scholar called Jonathan Shea who wrote Achilles in Vietnam, and it's all about veterans and homecoming and moral injury and this kind of stuff. And so I was very well versed in his works. And if you've ever read Tribe by Younger, this idea of, you know, everybody needs a tribe, everyone needs to feel like they have a purpose, and that's kind of a layman's version. Tribe, I highly, highly recommend Tribe. And so I said, you know, what first I want to start reading the VA suicide reports and find out what are they saying the cause of what is. And so as I was reading these reports, they kept saying the leading proximal cause of veteran suicide are isolation and disconnectedness. And that makes sense to me, that when you are alone, you are it's if you've been to the, if you've ever had to go to the field and you had to take a buddy with you to go take a shit, you know, the reason that you take a buddy with you to go shit is because you're stronger together, right? You're less vulnerable to ambush when you're with somebody. And so, you know, when I read this, oh, the leading possible cause is disconnect and isolation. He's like, yeah, somebody who is alone is vulnerable, right? In union, there's strength. And then the next statistic I found interesting is well, and twice as many non-combat veterans are killing themselves as combat veterans. And so I said, okay, that's interesting. And then I said, okay, well, if more non-combat veterans are killing themselves as combat veterans, and the leading proximal cause to all this are feelings of disconnectedness and isolation, what resources are available to your average Marine, soldier, airman, sailor that gets them in community or gets them connected? And the answer is not much. And what I discovered is about 98% of the resources out there are allocated to about 2% of the population. So if you are in SOF, if you are a Navy SEAL, Green Beret, Marine Raider, you know, there are a tremendous amount of resources in organizations that are going to put you in community. If you are combat wounded, there are lots of organizations out there dedicated to support you. Which to me makes sense that that was initially the main effort. Of course, the population that is at most risk, that has the greatest need, that we ask to sacrifice the most, of course, we service them first. Like, I'm all in. Like, I'm all in on these organizations that are supporting our Navy SEALs and our wounded. Like, I am all in. But the war has been going on for 20 years. And you know, can we not at some point start to get to a place where it's not only, and why are we still there when the data is suggesting otherwise, that these other individuals need community and need these resources? And so what I found is that there was always some kind of barrier to entry. There was always some kind of box you had to check, or you didn't rate their services. And what I wanted to say is, let's get rid of all the boxes. Let's just say, if you served, you're in. Period. End of story. And so, you know, it's could you be disabled and be part of Patrol Base Abate? Yes. Do you have to be disabled? No. Could you have PTS? Like, could you all the, yes, you could, right? But I'm not going to make you check a box in order to rate our services. And you know, there's a guy like me, I check a lot of these boxes. You know, there's lots of community resources that, but it's the idea that, what if I don't want to introduce myself as disabled? What if I just want to say, like, hey, I'm Tom, and I'd like to be connected and plugged in with other vets because we speak this common language and there's some trust that we could just, what if I don't want to say, oh, I'm Tom, I'm PTS. What if I wanted to say, hey, just like everybody else, I have a desire and a need for community. And I don't need to narrowly define myself as one of these check marks. And think about being a Navy sailor on a submarine. You are responsible for the nation's national security. You're a strategic asset. You have nuclear missiles on your submarine. That is a very important job. And you spend 6 months to however long in very close quarters with a lot of other people who are making a lot of shared sacrifices, right? And I bet you become a very tight, cohesive team. And then you get out. Do you know that no one says, oh, you're an E4 Navy sailor on a sub? We gotta, you know, no, like no one cares, you know, no one cares. But to me, I do, because I know that you are one of the less than 1% who have now had this incommunicable experience where you said, I'm willing to die for everybody else here. And I don't care if you're the chow hall cook in the Air Force or the admin clerk in the Army, all of us have signed that check. And that means something. And that is hard to replicate that experience anywhere else. And so it's this idea that that service, regardless of branch, regardless of community, regardless of combat, non-combat, intensifies this human need for tribe connection and purpose. And so all of us will have this identity crisis at some point who have served, where someone's going to hand us a piece of paper, a DD-214, and they're going to say, you're not that anymore.
Yeah.
And you're going to say, well, I still feel like that, right? I'm actually still in my uniform. You know, I went to the IPAC, I went to the admin office, and I'm like, nope, you're not that. You got a piece of paper that says you're not that anymore, right? That's, of course, that's, you feel. And so with Patrol Base Abate, we want to say, hey, you actually do still have a community. And we're really invested right now in getting active duty members in our ranks, because what we want to do is be preemptive, get left a bang. You know, so that when you do transition, because all of us inevitably will, you're already plugged into the community. And so I'm saying, hey, PFC, start now, join PB Abate, because you're going, whether you do 4 or 40 years, you're going to get out at some point. And, you know, that vulnerable initial identity crisis, if you already have that community, I think it really kind of mitigate a lot of those risks associated with that initial vulnerability. And so we said, hey, you know, we got to get people connected. Okay. How do we get people connected? How do we get people in community? Well, let's do shit that people are into. People are already forming communities around stuff somewhere. Right. But let's add the element of being veterans or people who have served, so that there's a lot more trust already kind of established, that we speak a common language, because language is kind of a critical element to kind of forming a relationship. So you and I can just start, before the episode started, can immediately just start talking, because we share a common language.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, you said you're into the lifting weights. Okay. Now it's like, now we can talk about lifting, and we can talk, we're veterans. And so like automatically we are getting connected. And so I said, so let's start a strength club. And anybody who likes, let's start a fight club. Anyone doing jiu-jitsu, let's start a gun club. Veterans, lots of veterans, you know, a book club. And now we got 15 different clubs. We got an art club, a yoga club, a surf club, mountain bike club, you know. And so if two or more veterans are into something and one of them is willing to lead it, we'll build a community around it. And then we'll do a couple things. One, we've built you an online forum so that you guys can connect anytime, anywhere, any place. And then we are going to take you out to our patrol base. And so where you can rest, refit, and then get back into continuing to serving. And so the other element, there's two more elements. The other element is that I wanted a physical space. And that's a little bit unique in that I wanted a place that every person who has served or is serving can claim, that there is a place that exists. It's a physical, tangible terra firma dirt. It's not conceptual. It's not theoretical. There is a place that you can grab and feel. And that place, you belong. Like, who, me? I was just, and I said, no more I was just. Lose the I was just. You served, it matters, you're in. But I didn't deploy to, and I just was a Air Force. Don't care, bud, you're in. You served, you matter, your service matters, you're in. And then people will say, well, somebody else probably needs it worse than me. And it's like, look, We're not saying we're an inpatient PTSD clinic, you know? And so if someone may need a resource more than you, agreed, that this is, we're taking everybody, you know? If you're healthy, we want you to stay healthy. If you need a buddy, we're here ready to meet you, right? And so don't give us this, well, someone needs it more than me, or I was just, it's like, no, you need community, you need connection, you need that purpose. Come rest, refit with us. And so we went out, we got 340 acres out in the Montana mountains, on a ranch, on a homestead there that's been there since 1880. I believe in the power of outdoors. I believe that good shit happens outside, and that outdoor therapy. And so we went and I said, let's have somewhere that's out west, that's in the mountains, that's in the forest. And that's so hopeful, that's so inspirational, that every single person that has worn the uniform can think, oh, like there's a place out in Montana in the mountains and it's free of cost and there's no barrier to entry and they're doing the shit that I like and I'm eligible. Yes, you are eligible. And like, and I don't have to know any secret handshakes and I don't have to pay any dues. And my own, my ticket, you know, it's Willy Wonka, your golden ticket was your service. That's it. You've all got the golden ticket. Where it's this inclusive model. And so it was important for me to create this physical space where we can rest, refit, work on ourselves, work out on the patrol base, get outside and then get back in and continue to serve our communities and our families. And so the community aspect is the last place, last thing I'll kind of address. And that's this idea of we have these regional chapters. And so we've got SoCal, Texas, New York, New Jersey, Atlanta, Chicago, Philadelphia, Quantico, North Carolina. So we've got, you know, 15 or 20 of these, and we're going to have one in every state and every region. And the idea is, what was so important to me is to change the narrative around veterans in service. And so much of the narrative was veterans are damaged, veterans are victim, veterans are broken, entitled. And I said, that's not me. That's not the veterans that I know. And so let's form these local chapters and let's predicate them around service and also a social aspect. And so let's once a month or once every couple months link up with someone who's doing the work in the community, a trusted partner in the community that's meeting the greatest needs in the community. And let's get out there and serve with that organization. And then let's go surf or let's go meet for coffee. Let's go have a beer, whatever. You know, let's go for a hike. Our Chicago chapter just went out to Starved Rock and did a hike together. Our SoCal chapter has been partnered with Recycle for Veterans, and they keep going out there. They keep picking up all the trash on the beaches. And so it's not that veterans are damaged, broken, entitled. It's that veterans are men and women of service and who continue to serve and who address our greatest needs. And so, and are people who are willing to make sacrifice. And so, so our regional chapters afford members, you know, once a month they come together, some kind of social aspect and some kind of service aspect. And so it's that physical community and it's that purpose. And so, yeah, I didn't, there are lots of veteran service organizations built around service, you know? And so we're not saying that that's our, but that's just part of what we do. We can provide the manpower because of our inclusivity. 17.4 million veterans are eligible because of our inclusivity. Almost 2 million active duty reservist National Guard members are all eligible. And so whatever your organization is, we say, hey, do you need some manpower to do, you know, clean up whatever, go to the soup kitchen? Like we've got a PB Abate club in your area and we'd like to serve. And so, yeah, I think I did not see, I kind of shifted the paradigm in that it was not a whole lot of boxes that you had to check. It was like, hey, it's an inclusive kind of paradigm where your service is your admittance to entry.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And like, just to throw some knowledge your way to increase your vernacular in business, they would call you a disruptor, right?
Okay.
They talk about that in real estate a lot. They talk about it in the fitness world where someone infiltrates an industry and completely turns it upside down by doing exactly what it needs. And it's literally in the opposite manner, you know, like for you, it's like, hey, veterans are going through enough, whether they were combat experienced or not. And we have all of these stipulations and other obstacles / boxes they got to check. And they don't even like talking about it in the first place. They're already reluctant to ask for help because they're people of service. They already don't want to ask for help. So why are we asking them 30 different questions that says right in front of their fucking face whether they qualify or not? They're going to get two questions in with two no's and they're going to give up on it and not even seek to help versus going to the root of it. Are we here to help veterans or not? And then removing every question also removes every opportunity for a veteran not to get the help. Ah, well, somebody needs it more than me. Well, you don't have access to who we're helping right now. We have room. We're here for you. It's not your job to say whether we can take you in or not. We already said we can take you in. So you're eliminating their excuses, those self-imposed restrictions that they're giving themselves. You're eliminating it. And then secondly, with all the different clubs you have, you're also not allowing the typical look or hobby of a veteran to be bottlenecked into just lifting weights or bow hunting. You want to do yoga? You want to ride a bike? You want to slam your dick in a door? Really? Oh, and there's two of you? Great. We got a dick in door slamming contest. Great. Awesome. Have at it, right? Like, and I'm being funny for the sake of the podcast, but you're eliminating every self-imposed restriction someone's looking to give themselves while creating endless opportunity to just be a part of it, you know? And like, one thing that stuck out for me was when you're like, yep, nope, here's your DD214. You're not this anymore. And it's like, dude, I had some rough shit. The transition's rough, and I don't want to bog this podcast down with my stories, but I've sat and cried in front of Eli on numerous occasions as we grew. And I was pretty good by then, and I was still challenged, but man, like, the one thing that super helped me was not letting go of being a Marine or being a police officer. It was remembering I'm still that, man. Like, I still wear my Eagle Globe and Anchor. I still wear my badge. And, like, what dude made that dude go be that dude in everything that you're doing? And Thank God for my son, because, you know, when we were pregnant with my son, I'm 2 weeks into real estate, 2 weeks out of a pantry, you know, but it forced me to think about what I wanted to teach my son, who I wanted to be around my son, the type of integrity I wanted to have with him, and what would I stand for? And a lot of that indirectly forced me back to just remembering certain things about myself. And then it was like, man, how can I still be a Marine in real estate? What about, you know, being a Marine or, you know, an infantry Marine for me? 'Cause that's my story, not because it's the most important, just that's what I related to. Like, hey, what about our consistency, our willing to win, our brotherhood, our integrity? You know, like, what about JJ did Ty Buckle applies to real estate? Hey, what about caring for the community as a police officer and protecting them? Hey, where does that apply to real estate? And, dude, a lot. But, man, like, it's so much you think, and it's not necessarily anybody throwing something at you, but you take the damn uniform off and you're thinking like, okay, I'm not that anymore. I got to let that go. And I'm this now. I got to go do this. And it's like, hey man, who made that Marine? People around you, but also you. It's you. You're you, man. You're you. Yeah. And it's like, you have to remember those identities, and you have to still, man, you still got to wear those and be proud of them while also being excited to transition to a new chapter. You know, and it's, man, it's so interesting when you said, like, yeah, here's your DD214. Like, you're not this anymore. And, like, the uniform can be a very physical representation of that. You know, like, for me, leaving the police department was way harder than I thought, you know, and, like, it was also uniform related. And believe it or not, like, I had a ritual that I didn't know I had. But it was, you know, standing in front of a mirror, putting a bulletproof vest on, and then throwing my shirt on, and then my tack vest on over it, making sure it looked appropriate, but also was well fitted, and I had, you know, my body camera and everything else that I needed where I needed it. And there's a sense of, like, looking crisp and clean to society. So if I'm not in a super high risk call, I can be seen very appropriate and not scary, because my uniform was well taken care of and I looked approachable. But then I had everything I needed. If for some reason, when I'm done taking that cat out of the tree, I'm now headed to a shooting or an active shooter or whatever it may be. But that it was a ritual of putting that uniform on. And, like, man, when you're absent of that, you don't even realize, like, the impact that it has on it now. Right. So, like, there's just so many great things that you're talking about. And, man, one other key important piece that I started realizing too was, not only the community of veterans, and I'll be interested to get your take on this as well, sir. But so not only the community of veterans that I saw, like, I've still got some really close friendships, you know, with some great men that I've looked up to and that I still have in my circle that have helped from the veteran community. Once I started popping off into real estate and once our fitness company got big enough, but then really real estate, between Gavin Ekstrom and Eli Schmidt, which is here, and Scott Lefford, and I'm deliberately saying their names, you know, for the credit I want them to hear. There's a lot of high-speed, badass civilians that fucking love veterans, that want to get involved and help support veterans. And all of these guys saw something in me and trusted me as a leader and really wanted me to get after it. And that was the first time I realized, oh, there's a whole community of civilians that just absolutely love what our veterans have done for our country, regardless of level of combat experience or not. Just the fact that you went, they love surrounding you. And the friendships I've built outside of the military, and me being that military person that then contributed the representation of military into that non-military circle to kind of like complete that circle, has poured into me. And it's been extraordinary for me. But I think what you're doing, man, you're a disruptor. 1,000%. Eli, I don't know what you're saying. I know you're Eli's a super tech creative guy. Like, man, when you're spitting out some of the things that you're doing with eliminating restrictions and creating these limitless opportunities and then the physical place to go, knowing that if I break bread with you over a weekend without distraction, the likelihood of my relationship continuing with you through letters, social media, cell phone calls is that much more likely to happen. Golly, you're a disruptor, man. You'd make a great fucking CEO, buddy. What are your thoughts on the civilian side, you know, that I'm kind of speaking to? Have you thought of, like, a way to somehow with the local chapters at some point, maybe integrating a little bit more civilian awareness into some of these groups? Because I think sometimes we, even with good intention when we're in these groups, we tend to isolate ourselves even into a group versus realizing, like, hey, man, you've got to leave the nest and create a career opportunity for yourself or for whatever it may be. But believe it or not, there's a lot of civilians that would love to pour into you.
So I think we're happy to especially partner with civilian organizations in those communities. Again, it's who has the trust and credibility, and we want to say, hey, we want to continue to serve. And so if it was Habitat for Humanity or what's the one with Sarah McLachlan where you cry because the dog is on the, ASPC or whatever, you know, so like you want to go help puppies, you know, we'll, you know, so I think we're very happy to come alongside and partner, especially in our regional chapters with, you know, just 2 weekends ago, a guy called my outdoors captain's, her name's Tiffany Aguiar, and she's a captain down with MARSOC right now, runs the logistics. And she said, hey, some guy reached out and said he wants vets to come hang out in his box this weekend at the NASCAR race in Charlotte, and can PB Abate provide the manpower to come, you know? And so I think, yeah, I'm saying, of course you could sit with us. Of course we want to come alongside, and, you know, civilians have been instrumental in that. I've had hundreds of phone calls, you know, with, so this coming back to kind of military and kind of this PB Abate, it's like, you know, I have a vision, I have a plan, you know, but I also have the humility to know what I don't know. And I also know, just like when I was a platoon commander or a company commander, it's the idea that, it's my responsibility to come into the room with saying, like, hey, here's what I think we're going to do. And then it's also in everybody's best benefit to say, like, and does anybody have a better idea or better way to do that? And so, you know, I, as a lieutenant, I'm asking my sergeants, what's the sit? What do you guys think? You know, and sometimes they're going to say, oh, you wanted to attack this objective from this direction. I've done the attack this way, and you can't actually maneuver through that space over there. It's like, you know, it's a too tight of a draw. And it's like, oh, well, I haven't been to that space. That's really good to know. new plan. We're not attacking from the left. We're attacking from the right, you know? And so like, but then sometimes it's, I'll say, hey, we're going to attack from the left. And someone will say, oh, well, I think it left. And I'll say, hey, all right, no more good ideas. We're attacking from the left. I understand. And you get that, you get more buy-in from your subordinates if they know that when there is the time and the space available to have the conversation, that you do have the humility to go to them and receive that feedback and accept it when it's actually a better idea. So that way, on the days that I have to say, hey, no time to talk about it, here's the plan, go attack, and they're just going to, you know, and so.
But they respect that. Like when you give opportunities to have a discussion and they're able to voice their 2 cents, and then they'll understand when there's no time for that and you just have to take who you are and lead and make decisions. They respect that, and they still follow and trace, and they respect what you're doing. And in regards to like the PB Abate, you know, back to like that first question. So I'm guessing it's a yes when it came to, man, I saw a lot of like disarray and just chaotic nature, this unorganized or just non-successful approach to how they were handling like the veteran community, whether in or post, because it was all very slated to like the Special Operations Command world. And you saw, you know, an interesting way to do that. And when it comes to like now you're operating this business, do you kind of see it like a battlefield? Do you have like a fight? Like, you know, I'm not sure what your demeanor was when it came to your excitement / fear / eagerness toward deployments. Do you also kind of have like a fire in your belly, like that lit flame as far as like seeing this battlefield of business and making decisions and watching PB Abate grow the right way and affect people's lives for the betterment of it? And you are excited for the challenge. Is there any correlation from your Marine Corps experience into like the business of the world of business?
Sure. With anything, I'm a guy who attacks and to a fault. Sometimes I've gotten myself in a couple situations, crossing the Helmand River, all kind of stuff where I'm going to attack, you know? And so I have a hard time with it when it says no go, like we have a go criteria, no go criteria. And sometimes I'll say, I see your no go criteria and I'll raise you go. And so I'm going to push. And so once I understood that there was, I did my research and I understood there was a gap here and there was a need. I said, let's get after it. But for me, I know it's all about, one, the vision, and then the team. And so, you know, my ability to lead, I think it's understanding what my strengths are. And my strengths are, I'm like very good at talent recognition, talent management, building a good team, and then optimizing the performance of that team. And so where it's nice in the civilian world or the business side is that it's my duty to train, mentor, and develop and coach you, okay, as a leader. At some point, there's either not going to be enough time. We're not going to get you to the standard required under the time allotted, or it's just clear, like, you're not it.
Right.
It's very difficult in the Marine Corps because you're all I have. Yeah. And so, like, I'm going to have to, and where here, it's like, I get to be very selective and I know many talented people, and it's on me to be the salesman to convince them that I need them to come on my team. But once I have them on my team, it's just, I'm going to keep pushing the throttle. And so, so it was hundreds of hours on the front end of calling, getting on somebody's calendar, making the call, getting them to, cause it's all voluntary organization. No one's getting paid. Right. And so each person, little brick by brick to build the team. And that was, and you know, and it starts off, there's no one on the team but yourself. It's like, I don't, you know, and it's like, hey, you want to join this team? It's like, who's on it?
Me.
It's like, all right. And so like, you know, and so building the team initially was painful, time intensive. But once you build that team of people who can understand commander's intent and then just go execute, then you know there's no and so I'm good at building a team, optimizing the performance of that team, and then holding those people accountable and saying, okay, so what are you going to have do by when specifically? And then like check, okay, well, let's set up a meeting in 2 weeks then, and you're going to brief me on that thing that you say you'll have done by that day. And so I know how to keep people accountable, which helps. And I know how to, again, provide, if somebody, you know, if you have the why, you can achieve any how. And so by giving that why and then getting the fuck out of the way, you know, same thing with the sergeant, give the sergeant the why, give him that commander's intent and get out of the way and let him. And so I'm using a lot of my Marine Corps stuff, which is MCDP-1, which is decentralized and mission types orders, where it's all this decentralized approach where I give you your intent. And I just say, you know, in the absence of orders, find something and kill it. Back brief me on the objective, you know? And so the empowering and giving authority to kind of all the people that are coming on my team and saying, I'm going to circle back and we'll just to trust, but verify. But that's, so a lot of this has been kind of very helpful to translate between.
Well, as you know, it's powerful because when you're doing that in business, you're giving them ownership of their tasks. You're allowing them to have credit and ownership of like what they're doing, which is exactly what makes them feel a part of it in the first place. If they're just getting told what to do and bossed around, and then they just live in a cubicle working 9 to 5 every day, they're going to come in and check the fucking box and work 3 out of 8 hours. And they're going to figure out 20-minute bathroom breaks and extra long lunch breaks and chitty chatty shit in the morning. And there's just no ownership and accountability. But when you have a commander's intent, you know, and you've trained them properly, then you allow them to go excel at what they're doing. And then, yes, I still hold you accountable because we're going to meet on it. You'll find the ones that look forward to those meetings because they're handling a lot of tasks and they're getting a lot done and they're maximizing their potential. That's exactly what gives people the ownership of what they're doing, which is exactly what actually makes them feel a part of what of that organization, which is very, very, very real in the Marine Corps with small unit leadership.
100%. Yeah, I think just clear expectations, speaking things in plain language. These are, and it's all helped because, you know, when I give a commander's intent, it's got to be understood by the 18-year-old PFC. And if I can't articulate my intent to them that it's well understood in their language, I really haven't said anything. And too many officers like to convey fancy ideas with fancy words because they want to feel smart, or they want their buddy to think they're smart, or they want their boss to think they're smart. And it says none of this actually matters,
right?
And so when I write my commander's intent, I say, you know, we're going to focus on lethality by making ourselves hard to kill and being good at killing. Do you understand those terms? Like, yeah, like we understand that, right? Like, we don't want to die, so let's be hard to kill, and then let's be good at killing. Can everybody understand that? Right. And so I think, by being very clear with my expectations, really kind of driving what the overall intent is. And then that pride and ownership, I think it forms that communal identity where people are then willing to make sacrifices and willing to kind of put in that extra work because they feel like a plank holder in that. And so,
and it's for the betterment of the organization. It's being a part of something bigger than yourself. You know, it's great. And man, something that's like fun, I'm sure you already know this, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. Something like with the Marine Corps and then like police work. And I saw it more as police work because I was getting a little bit more old, and you start seeing things for what they are. When you're in your like young to mid 20s, like nothing's going to kill you and you're never going to get old at all, right? A lot of the things that I loved in the Marine Corps and like a lot of stuff that I super loved about police work will be limited due to the physical, you know, like, man, I can only hop over so many fences for so many years and be in the fight per se, right? And be that street cop or be on the gang unit. And, you know, at some point, like you start going into the command staff ranks if you're doing a good job, and you're further and further and further away from the troops, which doesn't mean that it's not rewarding. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure it's rewarding in some aspects, but you're missing it. But the one cool thing about business and like what you're doing right now, dude, you can do this forever. Like, you can be ground level all the way up through command staff with your influence and how you're deciding to dictate the vision of your business. That's what's so cool about entrepreneurship, whether it's nonprofit, for profit, it never has to go away. And Warren Buffett's like 1,000 years old. The dude's still in it, you know, doing his thing. And like, I feel that was so refreshing as I started to grasp that concept. It's like, man, the competitiveness, the tenacity, the creativity, all of these things are never have to go away because I don't necessarily need my physical performance, you know, to do these type of rigors. And then in addition to that, that battlefield is constantly changing because generation to generation, technology gets better, fads are different, how people connect are different, which means how we connect now and how Eli and I are running our business at 60 years old, it's going to be different, which means you're going to need to be different, which means it's ever evolving, which should hopefully mean you are ever evolving. And it's just this constant growth slash attack toward the betterment of whatever you're doing. And it's, man, it's fucking cool. I get jazzed up just hearing you talk about it.
It's been exciting. And more than anything, it's driven home the idea that leadership matters and
real leadership
matters. And, you know, leadership very much based on competence, actually being good at what you do, having character, and then actually giving a fuck about the folks that you work for, you know, compassion. Are you willing to listen, learn, help, and then lead them? It's that active listening. And so, you know, that translates very well into, and so, you know, I know a little bit, very crumb about business at this point. You know, today I was having a buddy who has had many businesses and taught at business school. He was helping me go over our pitch deck. We're trying to put together a pitch deck, right? Do I know anything about a pitch deck? No. I know a little bit about a pitch deck today, after I was coached through it, but it's this idea that leadership is very transferable, and that both civilian, military, there is a not enough good leadership out there. And so that to me is you know, is exciting that I can continue to do this at any age, at any that there, I and can you, continue to lead and serve.
And you, man, and this is no disrespect to your Marine Corps career, current career, past career, future leader as a Marine. But here's what's a crazy idea. Your impact as a leader might be greater and more significant the further and further you got into that civilian sector, into growing PB Abate and exposing it to the masses, to versus just, you know, your command staff and where you're at selected in the Marine Corps. And again, it's not because you're not an amazing person in the Marine Corps. It's because of how not lucrative, how high demand true leadership, especially a guy from your background, is just craved in the civilian sector. I mean, I'm sure you see it with Jocko and him building Echelon Front. Jocko was a lender. He was in the real estate like we were, man, and saw a ton of different disconnects there and started working with different companies. And then before you know it, he built Echelon Front, which is a huge organization that takes, you know, Navy SEALs into Pepsi and Johnson and a bunch of companies, and they go hang out with them for 3 or 6 months or whatever it is, and they help build small unit leadership within their chain of command, within their organization. And it's, but here's what's crazy is as much as we all know about Jocko, some people still have no clue who he is. And he's one guy in one, you know, intermediate level business with, I don't know, 100 employees or less, you know, as far as, you know, instructors out there that are influencing this ocean of business with adequate leadership. So there's just a lot of things that are out there. And again, it just never has to end. And I'm super excited to see is just where your leadership and your impact goes as you grow.
Yeah, when you talk about impact, I mean, a successful leader accomplishes a mission, a significant leader accomplishes a mission and makes a lifelong impact. Right. And I learned that from Sergeant Tawney, Ian Tawney. But the more importantly than that being a successful leader, that significant leader in you know, Patrol Base Abate, we're the fastest growing veteran service organization right now. But more importantly, we've already saved lives, and we are saving lives. And so when you talk about that, again, that significant leader, that lifelong impact, well, what's more significant than actually saving somebody's life, you know? And so, I think there's no reason we can't be the largest veteran service organization out there, because there are 17 million eligible veterans. There are over a million active duty National Guard and reservists, and they're all eligible. And we're saying, and you talked about this. And so how I say is like, we'll meet you where you're at. Yeah. You don't have to be, you used one example of a club that probably there's not a huge following in, but it's, again, it's like, hey, you're into that. Okay. We're
building. And so the dick in the door. You don't want to repeat it. So, dick slammers. Dude, imagine a bar that's called Dick Slammers. Who's not going to go, sir, you're not, you see a bar, you're walking in Georgetown, you know, you're done reading some books, you know, and you see a bar called Dick Slammers. You're not going to go, ah, oh, fuck, let me just take a quick beer. All right, one beer, yeah. Fuck it, let me roll in.
Oh, shit.
I mean, I found myself in some pretty weird situations, so I wouldn't say that.
Maybe so. More importantly, back into your point, though, as far as, like, you going to where they're at.
Yep. And so, you know, I think when you said this may be more impactful, I think, yeah, I think hopefully we need to raise over $1 million in this first year based on the growth of the organization, and already, you know, 7,000 people in the first 6 months. And that's just me and a couple of folks. And so I just think that undoubtedly there is significant potential to make a big impact here. And I think, yeah, I think it'll be very, very rewarding. It already has been very rewarding.
You're a disruptor, man. Like, what do you think, Eli? You got anything? I know no. We have. By the way, Eli is Jewish, which means he probably has a ton of money. So after the podcast, we'll see if we can't scratch a mil from him today.
Oh, that's funny. No, man, it's been fun just kind of being a fly and listening to you guys. Man, just to stress, you know, kind of what Will said earlier about, like, real leadership. You know, that was something from, man, like, being a civilian, especially when in business, you hear that word thrown around a lot. Every book about leadership and everyone calling themselves leaders. And really, it wasn't until I got to work around Will to where I really got exposed to what real leadership was. And real fast, man, I learned it's not all it's cracked up to be. And it's hard. And there's going to be a lot of people that it's don't vulnerable. Like you. And yeah, it's vulnerable. And it's like you got to be okay being the bad guy a lot of the times. And as a civilian, my only real exposure to leadership is just, I don't know, like you see fucking Steve Jobs talking on stage, you know, and you're just like, oh, wow, what a leader. And you getting to really see what is behind the scenes of all that is really, it's not talked about a lot.
It's the small unit leadership. Uh-huh. It's like within the ranks, who's pushing that needle forward. And something that we see in the civilian market a lot is, you know, is one or the other. You're either like really good at selling homes and you're a great practitioner, or you sucked at it. So you'll be a team leader and you'll create a course and tell people how to do it because you talk really well. So you'll create a course on how to do it. And it's all hypothetical. It's all theory versus like, hey, and this was embedded in me in the Marine Corps, you know, and it's not in the civilian war because you can kind of call yourself whatever you want. You can just go own a real estate team if you'd like, but in the Marine Corps, you know, like you're not a team leader unless someone tells you you're going to be a team leader. There's meritorious promotions. There's, you know, or even if you're going up for promotion on time, like if you're not fit for that, you will not be that. And then they will remediate and they will help you in order to push you along and push you further. But regardless of rank, you know, like some guys were younger, man. Like some guys just understood and were really good at fire and maneuver. They're a fucking team leader, you know, and there's corporals that just didn't have the capacity for it and they just weren't quite there and some things like that. But even getting away from that, the bottom line was you were invited in to the ranks of leadership because of your competency within that, you know, within your billet. And I think that matters in, like, you know, just context on us, sir. I didn't open my fucking mouth until we were top 1% in the world with what we were doing. And then it was like, cool. All right, hey, but guess what? Now we're going to throw a little gasoline on this, and I am going to say some shit, and we're going to bring some people around us, and we're going to start helping people do it the right way, because a lot of you out there are just taking people's money and trying to sell courses and whatever it may be, but we've actually done it the right way, and we've gotten this accolade here. That gave me, I guess, what I felt was permission, because in the civilian sector over here, like, I could have been a team leader 5 days into being a realtor, right? Now, would that be a good idea? No, but there's also nothing saying that I can't. So it's like, man, I didn't have anything inviting me into leadership like the Marine Corps or the police world. But once I started hitting certain achievements, I kind of created a barometer of like, hey, if I could achieve this, that means I've done A, B, and C consistently, you know, and I've succeeded with other people around me. Like, hey, cool, that's when I'll open. And it was the top 1% in the world. That was my goal as we started approaching that number. And that was for Berkshire Hathaway, very respectable company. And that's when I just started just like, hey, you know what? Maybe I'm good enough in business now to just be a squad leader and put a handful of people around me.
Mm-hmm. And what's better than a good squad leader? And Eli, to your point, you know, leadership hurts. You know, you had to make decisions that hurt. And I had a Marine who I loved, could not stop drinking. And before he came to me, he'd be an NJP'd for drinking, reduced in rank. And then I did everything I could to get that Marine meritoriously promoted back to that rank, and had the sergeant major pissed at me all the time that this was the package I was putting forward. He's like, you know, he's 6 months out from an NJP. I'm like, I don't care. He's head and shoulders above everybody. He needs to be a corporal again. And then we deploy to Australia when I'm a company commander. Well, guess what they do a lot of in Australia?
Oh, shit.
Drink beer. Yep. And so, you know, and so this guy, he gets in trouble the first time. I keep it in-house. I do all the paperwork. We go through the official ceremony and I say, look, I'm not going to run this paperwork. I'm putting it in my desk. Knock this shit off, man. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, yeah. And then like does it again. And I'm like, okay, like, well, I don't want to do this to you, but you need it done. Like, mm-hmm. because, you know, and so beside you have to do things in leadership all the time that I think really hurt. And that's why they call it, you know, the burden of command. It's the idea, especially as a Marine leader, like I have to, my resources that I expend are human lives. And that human capital is very, you know, very, you wear it with you for a long time, you know. I can lose $100, I probably won't be thinking about it tomorrow. These guys that are over my shoulder and on my wrist are in my heart every day still. And so leadership hurts. And it's this idea of likership versus leadership, which especially today's generation of leaders like thinks it's important to be liked.
Man, that's a good phrase.
And so I preach a lot here about likership versus leadership. And, you know, your Marines, they don't need another friend. They got enough friends. They don't need you to be the cool lieutenant. They need you to be good at your job. Hold them accountable. This is the military. It only works if you have discipline. And so, like, you know, if you are uncomfortable creating an environment where there's discipline and accountability, you are in the wrong profession. Mm-hmm. And so, like, you may think that securing people early every day and not making them PT hard in the morning is like will make you the cool guy. Like that will only last for so long. And ultimately what you're not garnering is their respect. Mm-hmm. And respect is so much more important than being liked. I've had many periods throughout when I've been in command where no one's liked me. It's been very lonely to be the leader. When I put my whole company online in Bridgeport and did individual inspections after we did a cliff assault with guys wearing their warming layers and they kept heat casing, I said, okay, NCOs, you don't want to do inspections. Guess what? 175 of you dress right, dress open ranks. And I'll inspect every single Marine for 15 minutes while you're at parade rest. Do you think anybody liked me after that? No. Do you think when I had my lieutenants writing 300 word essays and full PPE down in the squad, like it doesn't matter. I have a mission to get done and it's to prepare you for combat. And there's no do-overs and there's no remedial. It's not Call of Duty. You're not going to respond. You're not going to respawn.
But
right?
It also lets them know you're watching, man. Like gear lists come out. So that's also to show them, hey, you're accountable. If I ask or if I submit a gear list, you will get it done. I mean, period. Sure. Like, those are important lessons, but you're right. Like some people put the weight of good lessons to the back burner versus like being kind or being popular.
Now, how do you balance that, man? You know, because you talk about that, but then I've also heard you mention, I mean, man, the hoops you were jumping through for that kid that was drinking and then also taking the time to listen to people and be empathetic. How do you balance and find when to be that guy and when to be that guy?
Yeah. Judgment.
Yeah. That's a great question. So, you know, it's clear, but not easy. And it's, you can never forget that it's a human business. And I think, so often where I've made mistakes is that sometimes when you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail and, you know, you come in my field of view, hammer. Right. And so
sounds a lot like Eli.
Yeah, right.
it's been important for me to remember that everybody's got a story and that everybody's had come into this and so, you know, 99.9% of the time, what I tell people is results, not excuses. Don't be sorry, be better. But there is that 1% that person has a real, legitimate, valid excuse. And don't you know you'd screw it up so much if you came in. And so like taking the time to say, hey, man, is there anything I need to know? What's going on? Are you doing all right? How, yeah. like, how are you? Right. And so like, and then it's like, okay, nope. You're just being a dirtbag right now. Okay. The pain, there's going to be the, you know, the beatings will continue until the morale improves. Right. And so like now I went to a wedding of one of my Marines recently, and I met some of his, kind of figured out a little bit maybe where he was from. And I thought, this explains so much about this guy. And I really was very hard on him. And I think he had come from an environment where people were really hard on him. And he probably needed a pat on the back, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes, or a little hug mm-hmm. more than me punching him in the mouth saying, get better, I don't care. And so I thought, man, if I would have taken a little bit more time to listen and learn, I would have known how to help him, and I could have led him more effectively mm-hmm. than he and I kind of always butting heads like we did. And so, yeah, I think you never forget that it's the people business, and that everybody's coming to this world with the, you know, life with their own story and their own experiences. And
it's just like the exploration of it, right? Just to kind of add on to that, like time, you know, with someone does a lot, because it gives you, you know, especially like all the time you spend with Marines, or like all the time we spend with real estate agents, it gives you time to execute plans, be hard on people, set the bar high. But then in the interim of like projects or missions or training being executed, it gives me an opportunity to be harder on someone, expect more, or pat them on the back and say, hey, great job. And then just to watch the reaction, to watch like, hey, did patting someone on the back just kind of like let them coast for a week? Or did patting on the back, like patting them on the back here, man, really like jazz them up and really give them some ownership of what they did? And then, cool, how do I navigate that from, I don't want to just be giving pats on the back out because I think it makes you feel better. I want to make sure they're earned. But, man, just being cognizant that, hey, if there is there, just allowing that to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've gotten better on. I've always been like, hey, expect more, and I've been friendly about it in the civilian sector, but I've also gotten really good at I guess I'm thinking I'm better at it. Eli will correct me if I'm wrong and I'll beat his ass after this podcast, but I've been a lot better at, man, like if someone did a great job, having nothing to say, saying great job. And we've mentioned this to a couple of our agents, you know, we had a get together not too long ago, and it's just like, hey, I see your emails coming through and I see all the communication between you and Eli, and that, hey, I saw this get executed. I didn't need to say something for the sake of saying something. It was a great job. Hey, great job. Mm-hmm. You know, and like it, man, especially within civilians, like that gave a couple of women that we have, you know, that are within our team, an extraordinary amount of confidence and ownership that they can execute at the level they're executing, and just giving them permission to kind of be at that rank and that confidence to continue to move forward and take mm-hmm. on more. Paused on purpose while he was writing to make that pause.
Dramatic effect.
Hey, yep. Comms coming a little bit broken.
Oh, can you hear us now? Okay.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Cool.
I'm with you on all. A important leadership lesson I learned too late in my career is that sometimes, like you're saying, sometimes you just listen and you don't have much to say, but sometimes you just say like, all right, appreciate all your hard work, and that kind of shit will go a long way. All right,
I gotta ask you, because can you hear us? Okay.
Yep.
Good. I gotta ask, because I'm sure you're getting trimmed for time. Yourself as an officer and PB Abate, man, like what is in the near future for this? Like, what is PB Abate accomplishing, you know, right now, and what does it look like for you guys this year? Where can people find and donate or get involved with PB Abate? And then after that, if you have a moment, would love to squeeze a pedo story out of you.
Sure. Let me know if I come in broken at any point. But I got you guys loud and clear.
We can hear you good. We can hear you super good.
It calm looks. Okay. So Patrol Base Abate had our first retreat out at the patrol base in April. We had a turkey hunt. So we've already run our first retreat. Again, we've our local chapters, our regional chapters are very active. I mean, every month they're getting together and doing something. Our SoCal chapter is going to do a surfing retreat this summer. We have a military history chapter who's going to, our club, that's going to do probably a trip to Gettysburg this summer. We're doing three retreats in July. We're doing a book club, bike club, and then strength club, all out there in Montana, bringing about 20 veterans out to each retreat. Those retreats have outdoor therapy. So every day you're going to go hike, fish, float on the river, do something like that. Every day you're going to do some kind of workout. Every day you're going to do some kind of service around the patrol base to improve the position there. You know, my ask for everybody is the same. People say, well, how can I support? I say, grab an e-tool and fill a sandbag. And I don't know what that looks like for you, but we're building the largest community out there for veterans, and we're going to need that everybody's help. And so when we go out to the patrol base, we actually do build that place up. It's wild. It needs, you know, it needs a lot of work around there. And so it's austere. And so we have mindfulness at each retreat. So we've got Dr. Gelman. She's a VA, a psychologist, and she's developed an hour-long kind of mindfulness aspect of each retreat. But then again, if it's the fight club retreat, we've got a black belt instructor who's going to be out there and roll, is a veteran, and he's going to be teaching how to choke and do arm bars and kind of stuff. Right. And then you're going to get to do the shit that you're into with other veterans. And then, but we've also, it's not just totally just going to be hanging out the whole time. You're going to work and you're going to leave the patrol base better than you found it. You're going to leave yourself better than you found it. And then you're going to go back and you're going to continue to serve your family, your community. So rest, refit, and then get back out on patrol. We've got six or seven of our members going to hike Mount Rainier. Our outdoors club is going to go hike Mount Rainier this month, actually like next week. They're going to go hike Mount Rainier. So we're busy. We've got a lot going on, and every month new opportunities are coming up as more people hear about us. They say, hey, how can we help? And so every month we've got new opportunities kind of going on. You can go to pbabate.org and you can donate there. You can volunteer there. But more importantly, what I want is you to join a club, you know, join your regional club or join one of the clubs. And if there's not a region or a club that you're into, you can, there's the option that says, yes, you'd like to start it. Right. And so go join, become a member. That's all it's going to say is, you know, what branch of service and then you're in. Right. And so go join. And then, PB Abate, we're on Instagram at PB Abate. And so, happy to join, link up with anybody in any of those spaces. I hope we still have some open, spots for our retreats this summer. So if you like to read books, you like to fight, or you like to lift weights, you can still come out and link up with us this summer there in Montana.
I hate lifting weights, man. I don't know. That's a hard one.
I can tell.
yeah, right. Can you hear us okay?
Yep.
Oh, you're just giving me a stare because I said I hate weights?
Nope. Yeah, if you said you hate weights, I have to question some other things, but about you. But
what are the dates for this summer for the retreats? Do you have them offhand? If not, yeah, we can so always gonna, do you. Okay.
Yep. It's the 4th of July weekend is going to be the book club. The following weekend is going to be the fight club, and then the weekend after. So it's the first three weekends in July will be the strength club. But yeah, the application is hung on the website right now. If you go to the veterans tab, or if again, veterans and active duty tab, it's there. So, yep, you can go apply right
now.
We can have
Eli throw that up on the, we'll put the links in the notes on the podcast. So wherever you guys are listening, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever that's at, we'll make sure we have all the contact for Instagram and for all the other links that are posted.
Yep. And so, you know, we right now, our space is we lease it for $1 a year from another veteran. Eventually we're going to want to have to own that space. And so, yeah, I need to raise $1 million by the end of this year to kind of, cover all the programs. When we say free of cost, we mean free of cost. We fly you out, which is expensive.
Yeah.
We feed you, you know, we pick you up from the airport, we cover everything. And so with the amount of veterans that we're servicing, with the amount of programs we want to run, and with the rate that we're growing, we definitely need to raise some money. So far we've had some really generous and been very fortunate so far. The demand continues to increase. And so we've got to be able to continue to increase the supply, because we don't ever want to say, hey, no room at the patrol base for you based on just
cost,
that we don't have enough bandwidth or resources.
Correct. No, I love it. And obviously, and however we can help, we'll have to chat offline and see what we can do to get involved as well. And Pito, I saw him, you know, a little bit of context, and then we'll get out of here and let you get back to your day. But that is super ironic, because, you know, Corporal Pito, was he a sergeant when he was with you? Sergeant Pito?
He was a sergeant.
Yeah, served with him. He was at division schools with us, and just a great guy. I had a lot of influence from him. I was a younger instructor. I was a sergeant as well, you know, but a younger instructor coming in and having that – especially when you're at that level of instructing, there's a lot of dogs there. There's a lot of sergeants there, and they're great at what they do. And I had a lot to prove to myself. I had a lot to prove to other people there. And Peter was one of the senior guys that was there that just gave a lot of poise to that type of like environment. And I was talking about it earlier before we got on. I remember him, you know, it's a way of talking Marine to Marine. And I was a little frustrated one day with some things. And he's like, Grimes, you're still young, dumb, and full of cum to try to quit at anything, or be, you know. And he's like, but that also means you're a little hard-headed. And he's like, hey, here's where more poise is good, and hey, here's how to get after it. And you don't got to convince everybody that your intent's good or your ideology's good. Just get out, get after it. And the, you know, the response from the people that were instructing speaks for itself. You're doing a great job. And just hearing from him that I was doing a great job, and just getting a little bit of advice, man, like, it's something that, I mean, I post about it on the anniversary of his death every year, you know, and then I talk about it to you. I talk about it to everybody I'm around, you know, and I might use a different frame of speaking, but it's that memory, it's that car ride, you know, out to the range when I was with Pito that still rings true to today, you know. And then ironically, we're getting on the podcast and we're getting ready to start, and I see him behind you in that photo, you know, and you were like, yeah, that was my patrol, you know, when he passed away. And I just, man, you know, it almost took me back a step today, because it was unexpected. But it's just serendipitous, per Tom's words, of just like, you know, just being in the right direction on the right path, or just little key innuendos that might let you know you're in the right path. And I guess it's all on how you dissect it, and however I want to dissect it's for me, and that's kind of how I see it. But, you know, what was your experience with him? Is there any leadership qualities or any stories or memories you remember from Pito, you know, that are significant, or that would be good for sharing for the podcast?
Yeah. Pito, one, was just a real resourceful guy. That was one thing that, you know, we're in Helmand Province, Sangin District, one of the most austere places in the world. And he'd be like, hey, sir, I just got some steaks. Want a steak? I'm like, you know, where the fuck did you get steaks? And like, he's just cooking them over a fire pit, and just always got a smile on his face. And on the day that he was hit, so Pito was part of like the headquarters section, but the company gunny would go wherever I go, because the company gunny was my boy, and Pito would roll with the company gunny. So they're really kind of honorary first platoon members. And so Pito was kind of always going out on my patrols. And so when gunny had said, you know, sir, I haven't been in a fight in a couple of days, I know wherever you go, you're going to find a fight. You think I can get out on your patrol? And I was like, yeah, gunny, no problem. And so then later that night, Pito came in and said, hey, sir, gunny said he's jumping on one of your patrols. You think I can go? And man, I'll never, I was like, yeah, of course. And next morning he's outside my hut, my mud hut, and said, sir, I scrounged up some pancakes. And again, I'm like, fucking pancakes. Okay. And we went out that day, and it was the first time a local had told us where an IED was, which was significant because the locals pretty much hated us. And this mullah came up and said, "Hey, there's an IED in front of my mosque. Can you come get rid of this thing?" I said, "Sure." And so I sent my engineer to go. I put my engineer and a couple guys down to go get rid of the IED. And then two different fire teams went up onto two different rooftops to kind of do overwatch while he did that. And I'm watching while I'm up on this rooftop, and waiting for this IED to get reduced. I see two Taliban guys in the field about 300 meters in front of me start doing their radio checks and op checking their rifles. I'm like, holy shit. And so I just tell my radio operator, "Are you ready? We're going to shoot these guys on three, one, two, three." And the guy I shoot, I kill. And then the guy my radio operator shoots crawls away. And my gunny calls me, says, "Hey, sir, we want to go follow that blood trail while we wait for this IED to get reduced." And I said, "Okay, go ahead." And I always went with a maneuver element. And this is like the one time that I did not go forward. And they followed his blood trail to a building. Then they lost a blood trail there. And, but they go inside this compound, and in the courtyard, there's a dozen or so IEDs. And they call me, Gunny calls me and says, "Sir, you need to send the engineer up here when he's done with that one. There's a bunch of IEDs in here." I said, "Okay, either sweep your way out," because they had an old 311 Lance Corporal cross trained with the metal detector in there who was finding these IEDs. And so I said, "You either need to sweep your way out, or just don't move, and I'll send Benagua your way." And so I send Benagua up there, and he goes in there, and he's already put charges on multiple IEDs. They found like three or four IEDs, and he went to sweep one to put a charge down, and it was tamper proofed and it blew his head off. And so I'm up on the roof of this about 300 yards away, and I see the smoke go up, and I know exactly what that means. And a couple minutes later, Gunny comes up on the net and it says, "Sir, we're going to need to call for a body bag. Benagua doesn't have a head, and we don't want to carry him back like this." And I said, "Okay." So I call an adjacent platoon. I said, "Hey, can you guys, they're not too far. I said, can you guys bring out a body bag from your patrol base?" And as they were getting close to that compound, the Taliban ambushed that platoon that was bringing the body bag, and Benagua went to be the first guy out to go help them, which I think, or Pito was going to be the first guy out to go help them, which I think also says a lot about Pito. And as he went to run out the door, there was one more IED that they hadn't found. And he stepped on the IED and it split him almost in half. And that was a feeling I'll never forget. Because no one, I had four people in that compound with radios, and none of them came up on comm after that second explosion. So it's this helpless, powerless feeling. So I jumped off the roof and I'm running up there. And as I'm running, Gunny comes up on the radio, which felt like an eternity, but it was probably like 1 or 2 minutes. And he says, "You know, sir," and Gunny was a former DI, had that real raspy voice. He's like, "Sir, I'm hit." I'm like, "I already called the medevac, Gunny. I'm in route." And Gunny was some 7th Marines, and he was close with Pito. And Gunny ended up dying a couple years later after combat, which was also a very tough loss. But Pito didn't die that day. Corporal Bland, Corporal Leahy did some really heroic stuff and put him back together. He would die from infection a couple days later at Walter Reed. And, you know, his parents are always thankful to the efforts of some of those Marines out there that day that gave them an opportunity to say goodbye. But, man, it was a... I'll always think about, you know, when he asked me if he can come on that patrol and showing up with breakfast the next day, and the fact that he was going to be the first one out to help those Marines who came in contact. And that's why he was rushing out of there. And just always a smile on his face and a very good dude, and is very sorely missed.
Super missed. Yeah. He's a guy I think about all the time. Yeah. And seeing his picture behind you, it's man, even just being able to hear a little bit more of the story and what he was doing, you know, selfishly, you know, on the podcast, like, man, it's a huge gift to myself, you know, of just interacting with you and getting to hear more about Pito on those, you know, on that deployment. So, you know, a lot of us, you know, once he decided, you know, once he left division schools, you know, you go back to a victory unit and you deploy, or you go wherever they're going to go, and that's it. And I was leaving the Marine Corps, you know, not too long after he was, you know, changing units and all that good stuff, and you don't know more, you know, sometimes. And so I appreciate you sharing that, and I understand that it's also some of the weight that you carry. So I appreciate the gift of you sharing some story about our brother, man. And I think for those of you guys that are listening, before we get off, I think you guys, you know, if anything, if you're a veteran out there, I'm sure you're getting some great resources as far as, you know, where you can reach out and some great things like that. And if you're not, hey, that's okay too. I think you're starting to realize this whole, you know, just like the creed of a Marine and where the fire comes from, and just where our don't quit, kind of dive in feet first, you know, or head first, however you say it, just going all in and just realizing that, hey, if you're here and you're breathing, you have an opportunity, and you have an opportunity for a lot of reasons, but mainly because of guys that went before you. And that's something that I think about, you know, every single day. And man, just can't express to you how much I appreciate you sharing some of some of Pito, in addition to everything else that you're doing for veterans and just for the business community, and also shedding some light to veterans that it's okay to be an entrepreneur as well and get after it. And like the whole, like, if not you, then who kind of thing. If you see, and it's just something we talk about in small unit leadership at every level, even if you're just a junior ranked Marine, you know, if you're looking around waiting for someone to tell you what to do, why aren't you making a decision? Because you might be the only one left to make a decision. Or if you're the one that sees something, call it out or make a decision. Fall back on your fundamentals. And if, like, hey, if there's some things that you think are an opportunity in your future, why aren't you taking action on them? Why are you waiting for everybody else to do it versus, like, just taking some ownership of your own future?
Super. Absolutely,
cool.
Brother.
Super cool. Hopefully we have you back on, you know, over these next, over this year and next year. And man, I'm excited for everything that you're doing. One, to personally be involved, you know, and to be a value add however we can. But then in addition to that, just bringing you back on the podcast whenever you see fit, you know, as far as like just sharing some light on all the progress you guys are doing and just spreading that word. And hopefully one day, man, we'll get this whole D-Slammers bar up and convinced, you know. Hopefully we'll have we'll call it D-Slammers instead of that other word. But maybe that's one funny day we'll convince you to have a D-Slammers club.
That's funny. That's funny.
Absolutely. Well, sir, we appreciate your time, you know, with all of this. We'll we're going to start some outro music and wish everybody well. And as soon as we cut that out, sir, we'll if you hang on for a couple seconds, we'll chat with you and then we'll let you go.
Yeah, hang tight one sec. Guys, we appreciate you. Listen, this has been the day one. I almost said D-Slammers. Day one Dollar Zero podcast. Guys, check us out on YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, anywhere you check out podcasts.
Absolutely.
We'll see you next time, guys. Thank you.
Out.
Sip it on down and turn it up.